Hi everyone, welcome to the first FPS podcast in quite some time. Today we're going to be looking at the Nintendo Amiibo phenomenon. There's a couple of us who are going to be talking about what it means to us as game scholars and games critics, and also what it means to us as collectors and fans. So I'd just like to thank Neil Randall, director of the Games Institute, and everyone at the Games Institute for all their support that they give FPS. And I hope you enjoy our podcast. So we're going to start with introductions. So I want you guys to go around and introduce yourselves, talk a bit about what sort of stuff you collect, and why you're interested in Amiibos.
So my name is Alex. I'm a copy editor on First Person Scholar, and I'm a member of the Games Institute. The first thing I started collecting were Barbies. Because that's how my mom decorated my room when I was a child. So because I had a few, I just decided to add to that collection. So I like to collect the themed Barbies. So I have like the Lord of the Rings ones, and I have a James Bond one and all that. So it's slowly dying, and I'm slowly starting to get into figures. So I have a lot of just random figures that you can get at the cons for like $10 or whatever. I used to like to buy the figures of the character I was cosplaying that year. So and then Amiibos happened, and now I'm here.
My name's Andre. I'm a community member of the GI, and I guess the first thing I collected was Pokemon TCG cards. I like the lore, but I'm also like competitive as well. So, you know, I like to have a nice, well-rounded option when it came to playing decks. And, of course, that naturally was a gateway drug to Magic the Gathering, which I'm thankfully able to say that I'm finally out of. And, you know, a couple thousand dollars richer because of that.
Oh, nice.
And I guess for me right now, Amiibos, it's the same thing. I guess it's the lore. Because I only own Pikachu, but... Well, it's Pikachu, so, yeah, that thunder.
I'm Rob. I'm a member of the Games Institute and one of the commentaries editors for First Person Scholar. I don't know if I necessarily collect Amiibos so much as just weird Nintendo shit. I'm right now staring at a imported XL Circle Pad Pro that I needed to get when I upgraded from the regular 3DS to the XL 3DS. So there's a few Amiibos that I'm looking at that I would like to get, like Lucida and Shulk, but I don't think Shulk is going to happen. So I've been shulking about rooms.
Shulking?
I've been shulking about Shulk. Shulking about Shulk. Yeah, anyways. This podcast is off to a
break. Well, that set the mood. Nice. All right, I'm Chris. I am also a copy editor for First Person Scholar and a member of the Games Institute. The first thing I ever collected was probably also Pokemon cards, the main difference for me being I never turned a profit on them. They're still somewhere in my apartment in a binder. Pink binder, I want to say. As for actual Nintendo stuff, I got into really collecting that maybe first year of undergrad when my girlfriend bought me a Famiclone. Things escalated from there. Now I have every Nintendo console, every handheld, about 300 games, bunch of consoles and stuff from not Nintendo, a Virtual Boy that doesn't work. And as for Amiibos, I would collect them if it was a little bit easier for me.
And I'm Emma, the other commentaries editor at FPS and a member of the Games Institute. And I can't even tell you what the first thing I collected is because I come from like a family of, like, I guess collectors is the nice way to put it, but people would say hoarders who own, you know, multiple antique stores and all collect things themselves. So I don't even remember. But I've also been collecting weird Nintendo shit for a long time, just like anything I can happen upon. And
Yeah, so I've been attempting to collect the Amiibos. When they came out, I was like, oh, this is for me. This is just made for me. But it hasn't been going so well. So on that note, the first question I have is, how many Amiibos have you been able to sort of find, and how many have you actually bought, this sort of thing? Like, even ones you've seen that you know are rare but you haven't bought, or ones you've been looking for that you haven't bought because you haven't found.
So my Amiibo collection is here, minus Toon Link. So these are mine, Link, Zelda, Peach, and Samus, because they're the only ones that I've been able to find. But they're also characters that I like, and you can't buy a lot of figures for these characters. Like, I've seen Mario's, I've seen Yoshi's, and all that, but... You can, like, yeah, I have Mario's and Yoshi's in other forms. I also have Rosalina pre-ordered, Lucina pre-ordered, and just bought today Wii Fit Trainer on Amazon UK for an extra price because I caved. But I have never seen physically any hard-to-find Amiibos.
That Wii Fit Trainer is fierce in Smash Brothers.
So. Yeah, so cool.
Yeah.
Definitely okay.
I love the way she yogas people to death.
Yeah.
I guess for me, I've actually seen every single one except for like one or two. That's because my current situation right now is I'm in retail. So, yeah, I've actually seen when Villager, Marth with his little Link sword, and the Fit Trainer was originally, you know, available for sale.
Maybe she's nervous.
Maybe, you know, performance anxiety. You know,
the first time Amiibos have been out in the world. You know?
First,
it's a lot of pressure to put on Marth.
Exactly.
At least he still has both feet.
But yeah, I've seen even some of the rare ones, like the current you know flavor of the month, I guess, not to be too rough, but with Rosalina, you know, I've seen two of them, not for long, mind you, but you know, I've seen them all come in, go. Well, I'm happy with Pikachu, so.
I picked up a Samus and the Smash Brothers Mario as kind of like a Santa type. Like, this is something that my wife would never ever buy for herself.
Mm.
And then the Samus was just for me, like, kind of mostly because I was kind of curious. I wanted to get Smash Brothers. I wanted to have this weird fight club between our two Amiibos, where we would just, like, throw money down and bet on them to see which AI, Amiibo. This has not happened yet, but I really want to do that.
Why not? That should have been
Amiibo
the
fighting, yeah. Just, like, set up get a whole bunch of Amiibos together and set up a bunch of brackets and then start, you know, betting on the outcome. I feel like that would be a fun thing to do. So that's, yeah, and then, as I've mentioned already, I like Xenoblade Chronicles, so getting Shulk would have been neat, but I don't think that's ever going to happen, and I'm not going to spend a stupid amount of money for it.
I catch it.
What?
I
held you
it.
Touched it?
I
you touched
it.
Shulk?
Five? Yeah.
Sold it.
Yeah, sold it.
Yeah.
It would be better if he was wearing, like, the swimming trunks.
Yeah.
That's right.
Where they
have
the oil. Yeah, anyways. If you played Xenoblade Chronicles, that like, it's super weird. And yeah, Lucina, I might have to get a little bit crazy over because I really liked her in Fire Emblem Awakening.
Well, and the whole reason why I went to pre-order her is because I gave up trying to get the other Fire Emblem characters, but I wanted one.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, you know, just wanted one.
Yeah. And she's, like, demonstrably the best, so.
Yeah.
See, I would order the swim trunks Shulk, and I would order it from Amazon UK at an obscene markup. But that's never going to happen. As for the actual Amiibos, between my girlfriend and I, we have four of them. They're all some of the really common ones. We've got Kirby, Link, Pikachu, and Donkey Kong. They're all better than me at Smash at this point, so they're not fun to play with.
Yeah, they're jerks.
Absolutely.
We hit a threshold where, like, we actually took them out of the game because we didn't want to play with them anymore.
No.
It's equivalent of, like, inviting that friend over who's really good at video games. And then playing with them, and then just telling them to leave because you've stopped having fun.
It's an absolutely demoralizing affair. And speaking of demoralizing affairs, the turning point for me with these things was when the reports came out in, I think it was late November, that Marth, the Wii Fit trainer, and the Villager were going to be discontinued. At which point, I'd never even seen any of them on store shelves to begin with. Marth was really the only one I wanted going into it. And I just have not been able to pick up the same enthusiasm for trying to find these things since that happened.
Yeah. I've got Kirby and then Link and Zelda. And I have a Toon Link that a friend picked up for me. Other than that, like, the one... I mean, I would love to have them all, but it seems, like, impossible to even try. The only one I really cared about getting was Sheik. And after, like, weeks and weeks of trying to track down ways to find it and consulting various spreadsheets and forums, I also ordered it off of Amazon.uk because I was like, I'd rather pay the price of two amiibos and just have it come to my door than look any longer. Today was, I think, the last straw for me.
The only time I ever ordered anything from Amazon UK was a few years back. The Prince of Persia HD trilogy was originally announced and released, but it only got a physical release in Europe. And since I'm such a pretentious physical snob, I ordered it from Europe, imported it, because the PS3 was the only region-free console that you could do that with. And then, of course, 2 months later, a physical release happened in North America. It felt silly anyway. But I have one European game sticking out in my library.
I'm a bit afraid that that's going to happen, that I broke down and was like, okay, just ordering Sheik, I'm not looking anymore. And then, like, I don't know, this weekend I'm going to be at the mall and just be like, bah, yeah. There it is.
2 weeks.
2 weeks?
It'll be 2 weeks.
Wait, 2 weeks, do you think so?
Yeah.
Ugh, whatever. on that topic... the next thing I was going to ask is just, like, when you were still attempting to track down amiibos, because I think we're all, like, we're done, right? None of us are still trying?
I checked out months ago.
I'm afraid to look, because I feel like I'm standing on the edge of that dark hole, and I have not quite gone down there, so... Are pre-orders up for Lucina? Have I missed that?
In Europe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
It seems to be a recurring theme.
There's a Tumblr that is out there that is like, is the Lucina amiibo out yet? And just every day they update and say no. And it's one of my favorite things.
Well, so I guess what I was going to ask is, like, what lengths have you gone to? What resources have you used? What things have you consulted to actually try to find an amiibo?
The first place I went to was Reddit, because that's just kind of where I go now for things, and I was surprised to find a community there that was so big. And they also have a Canadian version, because obviously the American dates are off completely, and with the Target closing and no one knew what was happening with Rosalina, we didn't know, so it was nice to have that Canadian source, because you had, you know, posts of people being like, I checked today, there's nothing, or go here right now to this website to order, and usually it didn't work out, but sometimes it did. I would say I've been to the store twice last weekend, two stores, and today we went
to three stores.
And obviously nothing was available. It was just kind of actually one of those things where I was locked out of my cottage, so I had nothing to do, so I'm like, let's just go to Walmart and check, and EB Games. And unfortunately, I had the sad sight of seeing two small children wanting an amiibo. I'm not sure which one, but I walked in, and the lady was just like, nope, don't have any. They were sold out, and these poor children are just the saddest looks on their faces. And I'm like, these are the victims. These are the victims. And, like, they're never going to get their favorite character. And the parents may cave eventually and try to figure out international Amazons, but they're also may not be willing to spend 2 to 3 times the price for what you can buy in a store. So.
You'll be surprised. You will be surprised. I think some of the, coming from a retail perspective, I mean, I have to, when I wake up and show up to work, I have nothing better to do but to stare at them, because literally the display is next to the tills. I've actually seen some really hardcore parents, you know, with, like, laundry lists, you know, having I guess, you know, the same set of spreadsheets that Emma has, mm-hmm. you know. Tracking them all down, you know, asking for pre-orders, and this is not a corporate chill, me, you know, trying to push, yes, pre-orders are a good thing, but in this case, I would think that if you are willing to find an amiibo, I would say putting down $5 now to pre-order them. I think it's a good idea, theoretically. It just leads to more craziness for the people on the other side of the till, because we have to explain to people that when we get the orders in, you know, they're already allocated for pre-orders.
But it's hard to even get the pre-orders.
Yeah,
oh,
like, that's
right.
What I find fascinating. Like, last time I was at, like, when I was ordering, pre-ordering Majora's Mask, and I was talking to them about it and stuff like that, because we were, like, talking about how crazy that had been. And I was asking about pre-orders for the Amiibos, and they were like, oh, God, I hope we don't do any more pre-orders. And I was like, well, shouldn't that be, like, better almost? Because, like, at least then it's sort of organized. And they were like, I don't know, I don't. Like, it seems like places are going back and forth about whether they even will do pre-orders or when they'll do pre-orders. And when they do, it's for, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, like, with the Shulk, it was, when we opened it up, it was there for 6 hours.
Yeah.
And then it was done. And it wasn't just, like, the location I'm at. It was, like, a countrywide sort of issue where, basically, it was only available for a very short time frame and then, you know, whatever.
I watched a video recently of, like, a Nintendo exec. Like, early in the 80s or whatever, when they were kind of really starting to come back.
Yeah.
And it was, like, a whole, like, news story of, you know, like, televised interviewing this guy about what's going on with the shortages of Nintendo stuff.
Huh.
And he just had this huge grin on his face and was just like, oh, yeah, we just failed to, like, to account for the demand and I don't know. It's just like this, like, cat that swallowed the canary kind of thing, where they were, like, clearly pleased that this was getting a great deal of press. And I can't help but feel like that's...
Well, I mean, I think that's the big question that made us want to do this podcast in the first place. Like, is this sort of crazy supply and demand sort of situation that's happening on purpose? Or is it... Because people will say, like, oh, they're just idiots, they just don't know what they're doing. And I'm like, really? Because that just... I find that pill so hard to swallow.
Yeah.
This is a game that Nintendo's been playing for years. I mean, if anyone remembers Wii Fit, that was a nightmare to get for at least a solid 6 months. Right?
Yeah, I forgot about
it. I mean, they're
that.
Everywhere.
You're right,
now.
Yeah.
Even when the Wii came out, too, as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the Wii is even the console for a good 2 years. And I guess you could say that since the launch of the Wii, Nintendo has released their own games at a rate of about 0.75 a year.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. I mean, it's also that sort of scarcity model also trickles down to other aspects of. I mean, like, I'm thinking of all the collector's editions for Zelda games, right? I think the Skyward Sword one, which is, you know, the shiny gold one with the music CD, whatever, it was only released in one location in North America, was it not?
Something. It was really.
I think it was
weird,
like in the New York flagship store.
I got the special edition of Skyward Sword that came with, like, the special Wiimote. And, like, that was hard to come by,
Well, remember Master's Quest.
Oh, yeah.
That was, like, crazy to find.
Or even, like, with Wind Waker, when it just came out for the Wii U, and there was the one with the figurine.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
And that was, like, I didn't even try, because that was so hard to...
Like, even the Metroid Prime trilogy. Like, holy crap, is difficult to find. And unless you're willing to spend quite a bit of money to get it, you know, it's difficult to, you know, track down.
I got that, and I paid over $100 for it, played it, and decided I liked the GameCube controls better, so then I felt real dumb.
So, like, in terms of motivation, I guess, I don't want to hijack, but just in terms of the reasons why you guys wanted them, because it sounds like everyone has a different reason for wanting them.
Yeah.
Like, either it's just to collect stuff, or, like, for me, I'm really interested in seeing the functionality play out.
Yeah.
I guess that's why I want to make my amiibos fight each other. Smash
Which is nice for you, because then you don't feel like you need all of them. You just want one of them so that you can use it.
Right. And a couple here and there. Like, I'm interested in getting a Fire Emblem one, because I want to see it. Like, I'm probably going to pick up a new 3DS at some point, God help me. And I'm probably going to pick up, like, from what I played in that demo, the Codename Steam game.
Yeah.
Because that seemed pretty all right so far.
Yeah.
And so, like, being able to drop an amiibo on there. And getting a 3DS that works with the amiibos seems interesting to me, at least.
Yeah, I mean, other than Toad, for me, I, like, couldn't care about the functionality of any of them. Like, I want Toad for Treasure Tracker and to have that additional, like, I'm like a collect-a-thon gamer. So for me, I'm like, there's another thing I can collect, and I can't collect it without the Toad amiibo. If I don't have the Toad amiibo, I'm not playing the game right. And, like, but other than that, like, all the rest of them, it's like, yeah, I could care less. It's just, like, I thought at first, I was like, oh, finally, an accessible way to collect Nintendo stuff in North America that's not searching eBay or trolling Value Village.
Did you ever see the vending machines where you could get, like, little keychain fob things for, like, $2?
Yeah. Like, I have a lot of that stuff and, like, a lot of the little, like, balls. What are those called?
Capsule toys.
Those capsule toy balls. Like, I have a whole bunch of those on my desk and stuff like that. But even those are hard to come by.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about, like, back when there was, the ramp up towards the Amiibo release. I believe Loot Crate was doing something?
Yes.
Where they were going to offer you a 12-month subscription or something like that for not only Amiibos, so you would be getting guaranteed the first wave of Amiibos, but as well as some additional Nintendo swag. And some people were criticizing them, saying that basically you're not saving money necessarily, because you're paying for all of the Meebles straight up, but you're just getting some, an extra t-shirt or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And how people were saying that it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I have to think back now, after the fact, what are some of those critics saying now?
Yeah, people would jump at that now. People would
if there was a guarantee. Yeah, it's guaranteed Marth, Wii Fit Trainer.
Yeah.
I think that was a smart idea on their part, though I don't think there was any distribution for Canada at the time.
I think people just didn't maybe, understand at that point when they were criticizing that, how big it would be, because, adult gamers were very, brush-off about Disney Infinity and Skylanders. Like, they were very, oh, it's stupid, it's dumb. Which is funny, because, in comparison, buying, two Disney Infinity characters in a playset gets you, 20 hours of gameplay, whereas this gets you, a costume in Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Or some daily loot from Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah.
Great.
Enthusiasm.
Well, and I think...
Do you own Hyrule Warriors?
Yeah, I own Hyrule Warriors, and I pre-ordered the DLC, and I'm still angry that I got Tingle and no Skull Kid.
Man, that's my ultimate amiibo. Tingle amiibo. The only thing better than Sheik.
Well, and you wonder, what other games they may release them with. Is it just going to be these core Nintendo games, or is the new Zelda going to have a series of amiibos?
Yeah, that's a good point, because that's the sort of thing, if that was true, the new Zelda comes out and there's a series of amiibos, that's the sort of stuff that I start open up my wallet for. I'm just do whatever you want.
Yeah, I'd be interested in seeing how much per unit Nintendo makes, because I suspect they're trying to strike that balance between they don't want to keep putting out so many that it saturates the market or discourages people or burns people out. If you put it at a bunch of small things and it's just cycling so quickly, people just kind of get over it.
But I think people are getting over it because of undersaturation.
Yeah.
Where people I think about a couple days ago when we were all sitting in the office and I had Amazon.ca, Amazon UK, Amazon, the France Amazon open, and I had them all open, and I had a spreadsheet open, and I had Reddit open, and I had the Facebook group open, and I had the Amiibo hashtag open on Twitter. And despite all of this, still don't have a Sheik Amiibo. And I use that to say pre-order the Toad Amiibo and pre-order Rosalina. And now they're saying, now they're saying Toad might not even be rare, right? So that might not even been a feat, really.
Looking at the way that it's been with, looking at the difficulties that there have been in procuring the amiibos that have come out so far, I'm kind of concerned about Nintendo's plans for the future in terms of how they're going to integrate them with their games. Because right now they're really just optional accessories. Sure, extra costumes, whatever. But I'm worried that a game is going to come out where amiibos are an important gameplay function and Nintendo's still not going to deliver. I feel like it's going to be like the e-reader cards all over again back on the Game Boy Advance.
Oh, God, yeah.
If you remember Super Mario Bros. 3, one of the big selling points when they ported it to the GBA was that you could buy e-reader cards for it and you could scan them in and get new levels and do all this cool stuff. Unfortunately, the e-reader market imploded at the same time in North America. Very few of the cards actually made it here. And most of the extra functionality for Super Mario Bros. 3 is completely locked out for North American players.
Yeah, so yeah. We could look at a situation like that. Because, like, that's the thing about the Mario Party amiibos. They might be available, you know, quote, in abundance, as they said. But other people are saying, like, they'll be hard to come by, like, especially Toad. And, like, we don't know for sure, but it looks like there's parts of Mario Party or things you wouldn't be able to do in Mario Party unless you had those amiibos.
But realistically, who wants to play
I heard this Mario Party's gonna be sick, guys.
Finish up with the last 10.
Have you played any of the like last 9 of them?
I heard this one's gonna be especially cool.
I still have a scar on my palm from the first one back in 1998.
From palming
yeah.
the
yeah.
Yeah.
So can we like lay this on the table that this is fucking exploitative? Like just like really, you know, no uncertain terms here. This is really exploitative. And it's also kind of reinforcing the whole you need to pre-order stuff to get things. In the video game industry?
Well, I mean, I think that leads to the question, like, why does Nintendo specifically do this to people?
Because they suck at doing DLC?
Well, but, like, I don't even mean, like...
I would contest that point. Okay.
Like, I don't even mean as a company, though. I mean, like Nintendo is, like, a culture, as, like, a hobby. Like, I mean, I feel like it's, like, you can be, like, a... There's, like, the gamer,
yeah.
And you can be... But, like, knowing Nintendo stuff and doing Nintendo stuff and being involved, it's, like, a whole other thing. It's like a more historical act.
Yeah.
Well, and we compared it earlier to like Disney. Like Nintendo's like the Disney of games, except Disney does it right, in my opinion, because they have like Nintendo a ton of different kind of characters and worlds and things like that. But the thing is you can buy any character if you want. Elsa, you know, you can get Elsa, and that's obviously a huge example of, you know, that going, having a crisis where people were scrambling to stores looking for the Elsa dresses.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's fine. Or if you, like, you want Jack Skellington, like for Nightmare Before Christmas, there's a fuck ton of stuff you can get for Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, no matter, you can pick any movie, and they have things for it.
Yeah.
If you want Fire Emblem stuff here? You can't get Fire Emblem stuff here.
No.
The Villager, like the
Animal
Crossing?
No.
Do I, Samus? Like, I wish I could buy those sweet-ass Samus figures, but you either have to spend, like, hundreds of dollars. Like, there was a light-up one that they had that was really cool.
I, like, just can't even imagine
like,
the money I would have dropped on toys over the years if there was, like, yeah, like, you know, like the Animal Crossing toys
yeah.
they have in Japan. If they were here, like, pfft. Or, like, if, like, more Zelda merchandise that's not just, like, oh, we put Link to the Past Link on a DS case, like, that sort of bullshit. Like, real Zelda merchandise, like, I would have spent
There's
tons
no middle
of money
ground.
On that.
You either can buy these, which, in my opinion, are really low quality for the most part.
Yeah.
Or you spend hundreds of dollars and import it. Or
yeah.
you're, and even then, you have to pre-order those figures now.
Yeah.
Like, to get them.
Like, I think to a certain degree, too, it's part of the culture of Nintendo that it's about control over quality, I would like to say. Because
mm-hmm.
even you look back to the original NES, you know, it had to be approved by Nintendo or else it couldn't, or else, you know, the cartridge wouldn't play. I'm thinking of the
seal of approval.
Yeah.
I think with that control comes a certain level of quality, but yeah, at a certain point, it also makes it very difficult for people who are not Nintendo to work with Nintendo.
Well, look at the whole
yeah.
YouTube thing, right?
Yeah.
Right now, with the partnership, with the streaming partnership. I mean,
that's why I was amazed.
Yeah,
like
at what point is it like the comics code where you're just like, it's like a seal of quality, but really you're just fucking everybody over.
Right.
Well, and even with the Smash, the competitive Smash, Nintendo just sponsored Apex this year. But up until, like, only, like, a year ago, Nintendo wasn't sponsoring the Smash scene, but it's huge. So many people want to play this game, but they're working so hard for people to not play this game competitively and not to build that community. And it's like, why not? If you want to
yeah.
build that, you know?
Yeah.
It's,
like
I know it's
yeah.
sort of different, but I mean, it's, you know.
Well, the fighting game community in particular is a very different type of thing, I think. Like, as far as it's kind of existed as sort of grassroots, like, they've really not wanted a lot of external, like, esports type corporate input. I think they would be happy to have that support from Nintendo, but I think at a certain point, there's a certain level of fractiousness that comes along with that stuff where it's kind of hard to get on board with it in a way that, like, esports can.
That would have to be another podcast.
Yeah, that's
a whole
other
podcast.
We
could talk a lot about that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Smash, though, have you guys, like, heard about the Amiibo, like, the, like, code conspiracy? Like, the... So, basically, it's, like, someone made this spreadsheet
That, another spreadsheet.
Yeah. So on the bottom, you know, like this one says it's AAAE is the code on the bottom of this one. So basically someone made this spreadsheet that like Mario's code on the bottom is ABAA and the other Mario is AAAA and then Peach is AAAB. And so on. And then, like, all the Sonic and Pac-Man started with C and stuff. And I guess they made this big spreadsheet and figured out the code, and that there was exactly 50 numbers that would fit in this code, which is the exact number of characters that are in Smash.
Hmm.
So that's, like, the new proof of why people are like, there's definitely going to be one for every character in Smash. All
right. Of course. I mean, you have to have Charizard.
Yeah, but like,
what about Mr. Game and Watch?
Yeah, or like Rob the Robot. I mean, people will go fucking nuts for that.
Yeah. I just want an actual shit about Robot.
Do
that
you?
Would be way cooler.
I'm sure you do.
They need to have Reggie. They'll have a Reggie.
Oh man!
So I can make my body as Reggie jokes.
Exactly.
Oh my god, a Reggie amiibo.
My amiibo is Reggie.
Like I remember that. Like remember when the Reggie me like came to your DS? And animal, and you can look at his Animal Crossing and stuff, house and stuff.
His
like,
Animal Crossing house is nuts.
Yeah,
his bed sheets are his face.
Yeah. It was like this, just like the most meta level of like Reggie making fun of himself or somebody making fun of Reggie and convincing him it's okay. I don't know.
Yeah, it's Nintendo's in a weird spot, and I think, like, I get the comparison to Disney, but I think on the other hand, Disney has a certain level of self-awareness and understanding in its different target audiences, and I suspect that Nintendo really doesn't quite understand or is like very slow to kind of buy into certain trends or whatever, especially in North America. Like Andre, you were saying that that they're terrible at DLC, and I think in general, like when you look at Mario Kart and stuff like that, you're gonna see kind of boring approaches to that.
Well,
but
I mean, well, even though, like, even then, that I think with the Mario Kart DLC approach, that's actually good because before that, they just had no support whatsoever. I remember hearing that some of the third-party companies were frustrated with Nintendo because they wouldn't help them with, let's say, you know, putting Seasons Pass for Assassin's Creed. Not that I'm necessarily trying to pitch that, but I mean, it does seem weird when there's a discrepancy between Wii U's copy of, let's, our version of Assassin's Creed 3 not having any Season Pass support versus, you know, like Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, Sony and Microsoft gave them a lot of support on that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of maybe one of the reasons why some of the bigger third-party companies are not buying into.
And what that leads to is the only Wii U games you can find for like $9.99 are like Mass Effect, Assassin's Creed, like, but you know what I mean? Like, those games that are, like, very clearly, like,
third-party
good, like, good games, but why in God's name would you buy it on the Wii?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're clearly going to play it on your PS3 or whatever.
Yeah.
This has been a thing for a long time, though, right? Like, Nintendo's main strength has always been first-party, and proportionately,
mm-hmm.
they've always lagged behind in third-party support. This has been a thing since the Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they get away with it because compared to the other two generations, or no, not generations, the other two big companies, Sony and Microsoft, they have a more captive audience, right? Not just older dedicated fans like us who've been at it for decades, but parents
mm-hmm.
as well,
yeah.
who have learned from things like Wii Fit and have learned how to master the spreadsheets.
Yeah.
So they continue to reward Nintendo when they dick people around like this.
Well, I mean, I think that's the question. Like, are we just like rewarding Nintendo's dickish behavior by
yes.
driving to three stores this morning before 9 a.m.
Yeah.
or by, you know, continually purchasing every DS that comes out, which I know I'm very guilty of, like, every version of the DS, I've owned it, like,
I'm not getting another DS till the little new 3DS comes out, because that's the one I wanted.
the new 3DS XL, oops, we mean 3DS XL Tiny or whatever.
Well, the one with the faceplates. And
yes.
it's like,
oh, yeah.
going back to, like, you're talking about, like, Disney kind of understanding the markets. Because they, I would say Disney overall is this global, I would consider them a global company. And I don't know if I would consider Nintendo by any means. Like,
yeah.
they have Nintendo America and Nintendo Europe and, you know, Nintendo Japan there. And, like, it's all disjointed, and they seem to think that, like, us Westerners wouldn't appreciate a customizable DS with cool faceplates. It's like,
well,
why?
Being really into Nintendo here is kind of like this, like, like, specifically nerdy thing, like being into anime or, you know, that sort of thing. Whereas, like, being into just games in general is not like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's like being into Nintendo stuff is, like, a whole different thing because it's not a global thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a slightly different stream because when you talk about people being into games, you're still talking a very specialized language.
Yeah.
That even as critics of video games, which most of us are,
yeah.
which all of us are in the room.
Is that me?
You're just critical.
I took a video game studies class with you.
Yeah, you count.
Yeah, you can't run out.
You can't back out of that.
You're barked for life.
Unemployable now.
Yeah. But yeah, like, we kind of forget that we are talking very much within ourselves and to ourselves. And even when we're talking to, like, those sort of, like, it's a different sort of strain of the same kind of techno-fetishism that kind of underpins a lot of that stuff. And I think with Nintendo, like, I like that they're kind of off by themselves. Like, people keep trying to put them up next to Sony and Microsoft, but they're both playing, or, like, those two companies versus Nintendo are playing very different games.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%,
yeah. And Nintendo doesn't need stronger hardware because their strength, like, all they needed to do was just their art style in HD. Oh, hey, like, all those games
mm-hmm.
look fabulous. They don't need more power to push that.
They also don't need more stuff on the shelves from a numbers standpoint, because although they could stand to sell a few more Wii U's, that would look good in their books. Everything else, Nintendo has historically been better at selling their stuff at a profit for them, right? The last three or four generations in a row, Microsoft and Sony have sold their hardware at a loss, hoping to make it up with software and with that other stuff and with subscriptions. Nintendo has ridden everything out, even in the generations where they haven't come up on top. They've come out in the black, and they have a much, much bigger war chest than either Sony or Microsoft.
Yeah, and you see, and like, what's interesting is seeing how they react to those trends. Like, in some cases, I feel like they're watching Microsoft and Sony and watching those, like, charting those trends on a much longer timeline. And so it's interesting to see those things filter through Nintendo and come back out the other end.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, their DLC is a bit funky, but when, like, I have one thing that will respond to Andre's claims that, like, Nintendo is terrible at DLC, and that is Rusty's Real Deal Baseball. In which you haggle with this down-on-his-luck sports guy to buy the next chunk of the story, and he's this dog, and he has a bunch of kids, and he doesn't know I don't even know how to explain it to you. It is free if you have a 3DS, go and download it, because it is some of the strangest writing that I've ever seen. I think Dan Fazio, I don't know, he's on Twitter, and every time I mention Rusty's Real Deal Baseball, he favorites the tweet, and I'm pretty sure he, like, works, he's part of, like, Nintendo's Treehouse people or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's super excited whenever someone mentions that game. And it's something to behold, because it is like Nintendo going completely weird, and then no one really noticing, and it's just their approach to, like, or the rabbit coming and talking to you for all the Street Pass DLC stuff. Like, I've been rolling this around my head all day, and in a lot of ways I keep looking at Amiibos as sort of an extension of Nintendo's attempt to kind of look at how we do DLC, and then looking at, you know, obviously looking at, like, Disney Infinity and Skylanders and stuff like that, and creating their own little, the term I was using was meat-based DLC, just like some physical thing that unlocks content, but you're buying it, like, for the potential to unlock content,
because
it's not really there, like, the functionality isn't quite there, so you're basically just buying into a general idea that this could be cool down the line, hopefully, as I did when I got a 3DS in time for the ambassador reward thing, so I don't know, there's something
wrong
with it. Nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I will make a caveat then. Okay, so my bones with Nintendo and DLC is post-2014. They got their act straight with Mario Kart.
Yeah.
But other than that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should play Rusty's Real Deal Baseball.
I try to, but I'm not a sports person.
You don't need to be a sports person.
I'm not a free DLC person.
One of the mini games is me, like, is you're hitting balls at, like, UFOs, and the guys that are throwing the balls to you are, like, they are... people, but their head is a, like, pitching machine.
Is it mini games? It's like WarioWare style? Like,
it's just, you're just doing baseball stuff, but, like, it's a bunch of different things. It's the games themselves are, like, well designed,
so
but
weird.
Even if you're not into it, just you do it, yeah.
downloading it right now.
Yes. For those who are not in the room, I am actually taking my 3DS now, and I'm going to actually check it out, because if not, Rob's just not going to give me any peace.
Yeah, that's true.
He gets a cut.
I guess so.
Yeah. Of the free.
Rusty, wearing a Rusty's Real Deal baseball team. That's what I want. I want a Rusty... Rusty from Rusty's Real Deal Baseball Amiibo. I will import
make
that. Will be what
Nintendo.
I import.
You just need to put that on Twitter, and I'm pretty sure
yeah,
it's going
to
happen.
Dan
Bassio will favorite the tweet.
Amiibo.
He'll put it up. He'll send right
yeah.
I have to say, the idea behind Rusty's Real Deal Baseball, where one of the main gameplay elements is haggling with the dog over the price of the DLC that you're invariably going to buy,
and helping him with his like broken home.
This is infinitely more compelling than when Nintendo split up the original Wii Sports, HD-ified it, and sold it piecemeal on Wii U.
Or like how when you have to haggle with Amiibo scalpers. Yeah. You're going to end up buying them anyways. It's the same kind of thing.
They're all Nintendo employees, too.
That's right. Yeah. On the topic of DSs, I've been trying to wrap my head around the Majora's Mask DS. Because, you know, it is limited edition. Right, so limited edition means that there's limited copies.
Yeah.
But like, I have the Pokemon Y DS, and I just I picked it up because it was just there, and I'm like, this one has a design on it versus these other plain ones I can get. So I picked up that one.
Or this
and
is
that
the
one is
other
up.
Zelda one, right?
Yeah,
yeah, like that.
So is that not limited edition?
Well,
but
yeah.
Still, you could walk into a store and buy it.
Yeah.
For a long period
what does
of time.
Limited edition even mean?
I have to say that's luck, though, with the Pokemon ones. Because, I mean, when I started working at the current place I was working with, it was like a month after the Pokemon X and Y was released, and people were still looking for it.
Really?
Same thing with the Link Between Worlds bundle.
But that was everywhere. You could find that anywhere, I feel like.
You would be surprised.
And I think that's what shocked people with the Majora's Mask, because I hear limited edition, I didn't think, okay, I need to refresh the website every 5 seconds to make sure to get this. I thought, oh, I better just get it when it comes out in stores, maybe at some point.
I didn't even
you
think
know?
That. I just thought, I'm going to go to EB Games when I finish work today and pre-order one. And that wasn't even like 4 hours after I found out about it. That wasn't even good enough.
I warned you.
You did?
I warned you.
You warned me, though, when I was getting off the bus and walking into the mall. And I looked at my phone and was like, shit.
I'm not gonna lie, like, even knowing that the new, like, talking with the limited edition 3DSs, even knowing that there was a new one coming out,
yeah,
when the Persona Q branded 3DS was coming
oh,
out in
God.
North America, there was a hot minute where I sat there and was like, I don't know,
I could
maybe
one.
3 or 4 months, I don't know. No, like,
But
it's
I mean,
sickness.
The fascinating thing is because this is the very beginning of the new 3DS, right?
Yeah.
The thing with the Majora's Mask 3DS is that, like, now I potentially won't buy a new 3DS as someone who's like a Nintendo slave. I probably won't buy a new 3DS for like a year until another special edition that comes out that I like. Whereas, like, if there was more Majora's Mask 3DS, all those people who are like, oh, maybe I'll buy a new 3DS, maybe I won't, would have bought the Majora's Mask one, but wouldn't buy just a regular one. Like, when those people have a 3DS, then other people, are, like, I just don't, it just seems so obvious that, like, that's how you make people upgrade, is by having an incentive to upgrade.
Yeah, I don't know, I mean, like, that's just my general theory on just Nintendo and it's how it treats limited editions. They just do a very small amount. Like, maybe it's different from, like, I like to think that Nintendo has a different definition of collector, of a collectible, you know, compared to, let's say, Ubisoft with its usual...
Oh, God.
Crap ton of, well, I mean, they're nice statuettes, but I mean, they have a lot of, like, every game they release seems to have the standard, you know, collectible,
yeah,
quote-unquote stuff. Or,
mm-hmm.
Or like, you know, all the retail exclusives for Watch Dogs, and there's another game that came out, like, more recently that had, there were spreadsheets floating around of, like, what each version had in it.
But then that stuff, like, people really want it, but then it's worth nothing.
Yeah.
Like, just a short time later, like, I think about, like, oh, every time a Resident Evil game came out, I would get, like, the special edition with all the junk. And I'm sure if I went to go sell that junk, it's worth pennies now.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that's the thing with Nintendo, though. They've actually done a great job putting
yeah.
that emotional attachment or meaning into the titles. And I think part of it is due to the scarcity. Because
yeah.
I'm thinking of...
It's still worth something.
Like, I mean, when Bravely Default came out, there was that collector's edition.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a Nintendo, you know, like, franchise, per se,
mm-hmm.
but... It was the same idea where there was a scarcity involved with it.
Well, and sometimes it doesn't even have to be popular at the time. Like something like, say, the Game Boy Micro, that no one gave a crap about when it came out. No one wanted to buy it. You could find one anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But now that's like a really expensive Nintendo collectible. Like if you have one of those, you can sell it for a lot. Even though no one wanted it when it was like on the market.
Now, can the same be said about the Virtual Boy, though? Because remember back when it was originally on the market, people were saying that it was too expensive, it could potentially give you headaches and such. But then I remember, of course, when I was very young, you know, it was being sold at Kmart back when they were pulling out of Canada for like $80. And yet they still had tons of them.
Well, and now if you like see a Virtual Boy at like a flea market, say, it's like
$300
or whatever.
Yeah. They are super hard. I think Wikipedia says there were only 700,000 Virtual Boys ever made. So, you know, it's not like pre-order rare, but for what was supposed to be a major hardware platform, that's exceedingly hard to find.
Yeah.
Well, and then how much do we as collectors worry about value? Because, I mean, they have only have value if you actually sell them.
Yeah.
If you have no intent to sell them, it doesn't matter if it's worth $300 or a dollar.
No.
Which is why I'm still happy with these Amiibos, because
yeah.
I you know, I have them and I like them, and I don't care if they're the common ones, because I'm just enjoying them as is.
Well, I think that's what bothers me about, like, the Sheik Amiibo and the Majora's Mask DS, is it's not like I was ever going to sell that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, Zelda's my biggest fandom, and I'm just like, and Majora's Mask is my favorite game ever. So I was just like, this is a thing I have to have. And, like, even trying, it was, like, impossible to get.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk incentives. The European Majora's Mask 3DS was identical, but it came with the game.
Huh.
Like an actual physical.
But then would you get a Skull Kid?
I think it was a download. But no, the Skull Kid was a different pre-order, and that one was also really demoralizing because it was gone in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was
yeah.
the first real kind of pre-order thing that Nintendo of America had bothered to do in a while.
That was accessible. Well, quote-unquote accessible, i.e. not just being sold at its flagship shop in New York.
Well, yeah, because like I went to EB on the day that came out and pre-ordered this, like, the Skull Kid with the game. And I tried to pre-order one for my brother, and they were like, oh, no, no. So I just pre-ordered him the normal game. But, like, when I was there, I went in first thing in the morning, like, I don't know, when it opened, like, 10 a.m., 9 a.m. or whatever. And she was like, I have six. There's, like, one left after you.
It's actually something that's been bugging me increasingly in the last few months, and that's the disparity between the quality and service that Nintendo of America provides and what Nintendo of Europe provides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you remember back in the 90s, it was Nintendo of Europe that was dropping the ball left and right. Like, the market wasn't quite there. It wasn't as diverse, so there was only so much they could do. Not as many games were coming out. A lot of RPGs didn't hit European territories, and there's a lot of good reason for that. RPGs involve a lot of text, and Europe's a very complicated region, lots of translation, lots of other stuff that has to happen. But in the last few years, Nintendo of Europe has really stepped things up. Games are coming out there faster. More games are coming out there, like Remember the Tingle game, right?
Yeah, I had to, that ordering that in, it's like...
More pre-orders are coming.
Yeah.
Things are more consistently in stock in European territories, and it's Nintendo of America that seems, in the last few years, to have really fumbled the ball on these kinds of things. Which is almost embarrassing, considering the fact that Nintendo is... I mean, Europe is still a much more complicated market, right?
Yeah.
Just the language barriers alone.
Well, and just, like, being old enough to remember that, like, in the late 80s, early 90s here, you could buy, like, Nintendo bedsheets and Nintendo towels and Nintendo lamps and Nintendo wallpaper
and
Nintendo comics and Nintendo literally everything.
Well, they also had the TV show.
And they had all those TV shows. Maybe that's why.
That's what I said too when we talked about it. Because I'm like, our question was, why could we get so much Nintendo merchandise in the 80s and now we can't?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, well, they had the Zelda show and they had the Mario show.
And
the movie.
Oh,
it's not a movie. I mean, it existed. We can't deny that. And I don't know if that...
Resulted in
merchandise.
I have the figurines from that movie that I've stumbled upon at some point, but yet I can't find a Sheik Amiibo.
Yeah,
like, think about that.
But there's tons in Europe. That's
yeah.
the thing too. You can go to the store and pick up a Little Mac and a Pit and all that.
Yeah,
no
like
problem.
I saw pictures of like Sweden or something where it was just like full shelves, every Amiibo.
Yeah,
not a problem.
If you really want to mess yourself up, watch Blue Velvet and then immediately thereafter watch the Super Mario Brothers movie. And realized that, like, this hobbit was just basically playing like the same character.
That's my weekend now, Rob. You've made it. It's going to be like Disney Infinity and that. To bring it back to the like limited the edition actual, conversation,
yeah.
What do we think about the gold and silver amiibos? What's the deal with that? Are they going to be the rarest amiibos?
Okay,
oh,
what,
God.
What are those?
So, I just want some clarification. Do they actually have, like, bonus stats, or are they just gold and silver?
There's
what's
no information.
There's no information. Gold and silver Mario. There's a photo of them, basically, and it's real. It's been confirmed that it's real, but no one knows when they're coming out, what it's for,
because
what it means.
It sounds like they're taking a page out of like Activision's with the Skylanders franchise, where they
yeah.
have like these super premium, sort
mm-hmm.
of cheat coded Skylanders, which are like $40 basically.
Yeah, or you can buy the like, with Disney Infinity, you can buy the like clear figurines and stuff like that, and they have special powers. But like the thing about that is that it's like they have a common one and a rare one.
Yeah.
With Nintendo, it's almost like there'll be, like, a rare one and, like, a rare... I guess Mario's not rare, though, so...
Maybe they ran out of paint, and this is their way of reissuing like, a trainer or something, right?
Just spray paint them all gold and charge double.
Yeah. Maybe it's a, like, a... It could be a Mario Kart 8 reference, like, the metal Mario.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would get a pink gold Mario.
Yeah,
nice.
Gold peach.
Or, yeah,
oh, God,
now, what if they
peach.
Had? What if they had a golden like Marth or something like that? Like,
oh, people go wild.
It's sort of
gold Lucina, and we're talking.
Yeah, that's right. That's
people were like saying like, oh, that must be that's what the golden platinum rewards are for Nintendo Club members. But, like,
oh, damn.
I mean, and which
I'm
is like
so glad
really,
I just got gold status.
Really nice in theory, but like I really don't think like they're not going to give you that. That's
no.
way too nice.
They could
yeah,
make way too
way
much
too
money
nice.
Selling them instead of just giving them away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe these are like Nintendo's latest partnership with McDonald's. You know, maybe it's like
they're just in the Happy Meal and everyone's got them. But then, like, so then what's the rarest amiibo? Like, that's the question I want the answer
Shulk.
To.
I think it's Shulk.
I would have to say Wii Fit Trainer.
No, I don't know. You can buy a Wii Fit Trainer.
Yeah,
but it's a European one.
But you can't buy European Shulk, I don't think.
Yeah,
no.
Shulk was
right.
restricted to one retailer, right? Whereas, I'm pretty sure all the other ones were mostly, like, you kind of get them at a bunch of different retailers.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, every retailer, I think, has their own. Like, Meta Knight was Future Shop, was it? Or is it?
Yeah.
CDD was EB/GameStop.
And, like, Rosalina was supposed to be the insanely rare one, but now you can get her a whole bunch of places because of Target.
I think Lucario or whatever that Pokemon guy
was. It was Toys R Us.
Yeah, Toys R Us.
He comes out tomorrow, so people are going to be lining up for that one.
God, I don't want to hear this. Pikachu. I'm just going to be content with that.
There's plenty of Pikachus out there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You're not worried about that.
No, never going to run out of Pikachus.
I mean, like, it just seems like... And I mean, once again, like, this is just from a retail perspective. Nintendo is really taking a page out of, like, the Skylanders. Like, they really have been keeping an eye on, you know, how Activision has been doing these Skylanders launches, because, for the most part, that's what it's been like. I mean, from Spyro's Adventure to Giants to, what was it, Swap Force and Trap Team. Like, they've done exclusives,
mm-hmm.
very limited exclusives for each of the stores. And, in fact, one of the more curious things this year was, I think Toys R Us was supposed to get a limited edition, like, once again, quote-unquote, limited or selected types of Skylanders, and they fumbled the ball.
Yeah.
And now, like, it seems like every distributor is getting some, but not a whole lot.
Have you found, though, that, like, are people crazier about the Amiibos than they've been about Skylander or Infinity?
Well, Skylanders, I'm not so much about Infinity, because I don't really pay that as much attention to customers when they're looking for it, but with Skylanders... Definitely, I think it's to a younger audience, and so parents at that age are more willing to go the extra mile.
There's no adults looking for Skylanders for themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, for the most part, it's polite, whereas with some of the more hardcore, passionate Nintendo...
What's the worst thing a Nintendo person looking for an amiibo has said to you?
Several fancy expletives and a conspiracy theory about how all of the retail employees are have some sort of conspiracy where they're intentionally not informing customers about...
You guys have an amiibo smuggling ring.
Did this dovetail into, like, it's actually about ethics and amiibo purchasing?
Oh, God.
It possibly could have, but The first time, I think I actually just sort of hung up the phone because I really didn't know what to do in that situation.
You know who's buying all the Amiibos? The feminists.
Yeah,
that's
all
right.
Yeah, we
Jesus,
just got
take
them
the
all.
Wheel.
We just got boxes of them. We're buying all the Amiibos so that nobody else can have them.
Also,
we're like that Rosalina
rich.
Dude
yeah.
times like a million.
Yeah, that's
so for
right.
For
oh,
context,
yeah,
the Rosalina it. Dude is the person that apparently decided to buy a whole bunch of Rosalina.
100
pre-orders or something.
100 pre-orders.
For spite. Because they hated the character so much, and they hated the fact that people would like that character, and therefore would like go and buy these Amiibos and be pleased by them, so they've just bought
which
them.
Just like, why wouldn't you like Rosalina? Like, I don't understand. Like, what's so
of all the characters to hate in Smash, like,
yeah.
why Rosalina?
Filthish.
Because I don't think she's the most popular, and I don't think she's the worst.
I don't know. It seems like the weirdest character to have a hate on for.
Yeah, I don't know.
What's the math? How much would that cost? Quick, English majors, do math.
1,300 with tax, maybe 2,000. No.
Well, yeah, with yeah.
100 for 100 Rosalinas.
What currency? Canadian.
Euro.
Times
each one's $13.99.
Yeah.
What a fucking waste of money.
It's like $15.
There's people out there with tons of money, though, and nothing to do with it.
Give it to me. I just don't understand. Like, wow.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just going to sit on it for, like, you know, 20 years and hope that the Meeble craze continues on, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a retirement plan.
Then that's the question. Is it a fad?
I don't think it's definitely...
Like, will this keep happening? Or
I think it's going to happen. I mean... If Nintendo's to be trusted, there's going to be the new Zelda game this year.
Yeah.
I still personally think it might be delayed till 2016, if you want to hear. But,
yeah.
You know, I think, you know, Nintendo is good in terms of keeping the hype, I guess, of certain franchises or certain products, you know, going. It's definitely not Pogs, you know, it's definitely, I think people will have a bit more longevity than.
I think
like
so,
that.
Too, yeah.
I think in part, at least for me, it comes down to what type of functionality, like what type of continued functionality
mm-hmm.
is going to be seen with these things. And if Nintendo continues to fail to produce something, like, that's the largest question with the Wii U, is this, they went up to all this trouble to, like, R&D this touchscreen thing, and
yeah.
that's the bulk of the cost of the machine. But they really have not put out a lot of proof of concept as to why you would want like why this touch screen is there and needs to be a part of it,
yeah.
except for like as a second screen. Like it's great for me because I just want to sit there and play Monster Hunter 3 while like doing other things because it doesn't require that much attention. And but like I think if Nintendo isn't able to do that, then the interest is going to maybe fade for some people. But maybe I'm putting too much emphasis on the video game connection to this stuff. I think at a certain point, people just like getting things.
Yeah.
You're right. The gamepad's a good example because 95% of the time, it is literally just a bulky controller with a battery that quits in 3 hours.
Yeah.
I think it depends on supply. Like, I think
yeah.
if they're not going to, like, say, for example, re-release some of the harder-to-find Amiibos or they're not going to, like, maybe even, like, make all the characters,
yeah.
then people are going to still go crazy for them because they want to collect all of them.
Well, especially
and
with the really obscure characters, there's no other merchandise up,
right?
Right, people will go nuts for that.
Because you have to think of people that are just buying them for the, just having them as
yeah.
as a type of figure.
Well, maybe this is what's going to replace a Club Nintendo, you know? You have to register your Amiibos and you get stuff.
I was actually complaining today that you don't give me Club Nintendo points for buying Amiibos.
Yeah. Well,
that's
what
that.
That was the thing that worried me. Like, on Christmas Day, I actually, like, ripped open the boxes and was, like, flipping
yeah.
through them, like, where's my code to go and put in
yeah.
my Club Nintendo thing? But what's weird is that it completely ends, like, right around the time that E3 is happening. So I suspect that there will be some kind of Nintendo Direct around then, like, talking about what they're going to do next, like, what their new thing is going to be.
I'm not optimistic, because if they're getting rid of Club Nintendo at all, it means it's not working for Nintendo, right? It's either not making them enough money, or it's not sustainable. So whatever they're coming out to replace it is going to be in Nintendo's favor, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think what they're doing with the demo codes now, where like you're part of that ecosystem, and if you are an engaged member of their brand or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you're getting these codes they get you demos for the 3DS or whatever that don't have a limit to how many times you can boot them up.
Mm.
But they just don't keep doing the demos with the limit, which is infuriating. But
mm-hmm.
Well, that's why you have all those 3DSs, isn't it?
That's it. Yes.
Yeah.
I only have two, and one is not even mine.
Well, if we're going to talk about, like, the longevity of Amiibo as a concept, as a platform, as a thing that we're going to see iterative generations of, the only really reference point we have with Nintendo is the e-reader cards, because this was probably the last time where they produced something that was supposed to extend beyond any one game, and it was supposed to supplement the experience. And it worked in other regions. It was popular in Japan for a while, but as I said, it fizzled out rather quickly in North America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sort of physical DLC.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and, like, you know, they had those cards with 3DSs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That,
yeah.
Nothing ever
yeah.
happened with that. I forgot all about that.
Mm-hmm. And the 3DS has, like, a QR code reader in it.
Yeah. What does that do?
I've used it to get quests in Entry and Odyssey 4. That's the only time I ever used
it. The only thing I've ever used it with is with the cards that come with your
yeah.
DS.
I use it for the cards for, like, the Tetris Axis. You could actually have, like, a 3D Tetris thing come out of the question mark card
yeah.
for a while, but it was super messed up.
The only time I ever used it was to scan in Reggie's Amiibo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And scan in
yeah.
different Amiibos. Yeah, I used Tamagotchi Life to add various celebrities to my...
So, like, from the perspective of, like, games critics, of like, from the perspective of game studies, like, why is this worth talking about? Like, why is this worth considering?
I like to think that in a way it's almost showing you the madness that is sort of materialism, but sort of an ideological slant towards materialism, because now you're associating yourself with a certain brand. You know, you are clearly putting a flag up that, you know, you are a Nintendo person. You may not, you know, necessarily be 100% hardcore, but you are. But for those of us that have sort of, you know, gone head over heels trying to track down specific ones, or God forbid, create spreadsheets, you know, for. You know,
I didn't make the spreadsheet.
It's like,
just
it's
to
like,
be clear.
No, it's like it's almost like Moby Dick, you know.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, you're trying to track down your white whale, but you're doing so at the behest of an international corporation that is, in the back of my mind, you know. Rubbing his hands, you know, gleefully looking at the numbers that are coming in from, you know, global source sales.
Instead of, like, a historical materialist,
mm-hmm.
Like, reading of the Amiibos, I want to read a Nintendo materialist reading. Where they, like, because if you look at, like, there's a lot of physicality and embodiment with Nintendo's strategy, especially since the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff is completely ignored because it's not technically within, like, the diegetic part of the video game.
Yeah.
But that stuff can, like, immediately breaks down when you start looking at, like, second screen stuff, when you look at, you know, street passing, and when you have these, like, these physical objects that also interact with the game in various magical
mm-hmm.
ways.
Well, and from, like, a fan studies perspective, like, just how it's, like, sort of like this fandom in and of itself that's, like, just almost completely separate from, like, part of gaming culture,
yeah.
but just, like, a whole
yeah.
other thing that just, like...
It's a different audience that really isn't necessarily part of, like, gamedom.
Yeah, and it, like, fascinates me to no end, because, like, I do think you're right, Andre, about it, like, putting a flag up to be, like, I'm a Nintendork, basically.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, I feel like my flag has sort of always been up. Like, my cubicle's covered in Nintendo stuff, and I have a Nintendo tattoo, for God's sakes. But, like, so, like, I am, like, done. There's no hope for me. But I think it's really, like, raised the profile that I'm like, oh, this is a thing that's still happening. It's not, like, a childhood nostalgia thing. It's,
yeah.
like, it's an evolving thing, I guess.
I think it's, too, it's an attachment to the characters, because... I think, like, most of us have grown up with Nintendo, and we love the characters, and I think it shows in that, you know, Sony comes out with their version of Smash Bros., and that, no one cared about that. There's no classic Sony characters that
they
anyone
didn't have
has.
Figures.
Crash Bandicoot.
But they, like, I mean, who really had an attachment to Crash Bandicoot in the same way that people, like... Like Link and Mario.
People are all lining up to buy copies of Battle Royale.
Oh, God.
So the weird thing for me was, like, I actually was not a, like, Nintendo Like, when I was growing up, I had a PC. Like, it was...
Yeah.
My folks were like, we're not going to buy you that Nintendo. We're going to upgrade your computer so you can play Quake, which was great.
Yeah.
But it also meant it was super weird because even now, like, my wife grew up with Mario, and we actually, last night, one of the Nintendo reward things that I, like, cashed in on was Super Mario Bros. 3, because she never really played it. And I was just watching her play it, and I was like, I died. I would go over to a friend's house, I would sit down next to them, they would, like, boot up a two-player game, and I would lose all of my lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, on the first Goomba. And then they would gingerly take the controller away from me, and I would sit there and watch them.
I wonder if that, like, determines what kind of gamer you're going to be later in life. Like, whether your parents bought you, like a PC or a Sega or a Nintendo, it, like, determines how good you are at platforming forever.
Now, here's an interesting question, now that I was hearing sort of your ideas about this. I find it interesting that Nintendo does this with Smash Brothers. They didn't do it for Mario Kart. I mean, imagine if the difference if it was like for Mario 3D World.
Mm.
If it would be the same sort of popularity. Because, I mean, let's face it. When the first Smash Brothers came out, it was almost like
Nintendo.
Exactly. It was Nintendo's way of acknowledging that people, that, you know, that their audience has always, you know, tried to puzzle out who is stronger, Link or Mario or...
Yeah,
Pikachu,
those
play,
that is like Smash Brothers was those playground arguments. Like, even if I didn't ever play Zelda or Mario, I knew who they were and I had opinions. I was 9.
This new Smash is almost like it's like the Nintendo version of doing the new 52, right? Like, it's all about having that, like they do in comics where they have this meta universe and there's crossovers and there's this and there's that. And it's like it inspires a whole bunch of like. A new form of consumerism that's like on a higher level than like the individual fandoms.
Well, and Link appeared in Mario Kart as DLC for the first time ever.
Yeah, like because it's one thing to be like a Zelda fan or a Mario fan, but like I think like it wouldn't be weird to say you're a Nintendo fan.
Yeah.
Whereas like people don't walk around being like I'm a Sony fan.
Okay.
Do they?
Yeah. I mean that's console wars.
Yeah.
I mean
that's
people will
different.
Say I like this console.
Yeah.
But it's not about so much like...
Yeah, you don't necessarily care about the lore. You're trying to justify
your
purchase of this device.
I like Killzone.
Yeah.
Yes, no one ever, you know?
Yeah.
but no one ever says, like, too, I bought, like, a whole... That's a lie, actually. I was going to say, like, Gears of War merchandise, but I have all the figures of that, so that's a bad example. But, like, you know, or, like, they're not attached to Marcus Phoenix, really.
Well,
like, you know,
like,
at least
games
characters.
That, like, create that sort of, like, Final Fantasy and stuff that create that sort of, like... The similar type of fandom.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure. But...
And you can buy those figures here.
Yeah.
Actually, you can, you know, most of the time.
Then, I mean, here's the crazy thing, too. Like, back in the original Smash Brothers, you know, you could collect figurines in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
like,
this,
remember,
they look just like this.
Just, I mean, it's almost as if this was, like, a master plan, like, 20 years ago.
The master hand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's the one with the money. He's, like, making it rain all over the world.
Welcome to the minds of game academia.
I think the craze around amiibos indicates the death rattle of material culture in video games. I guess that takes some unpacking.
That's pretty profound. That's almost as profound as you saying I shouldn't have to consult a spreadsheet to find ways to give Nintendo my money.
I feel like that
Nintendo
statement
should provide that spreadsheet.
Yes.
I feel like that statement demanded less unpacking.
Can I just give them my credit card number and they can just charge me occasionally?
Yeah.
Send me something weird.
Anyway, what I mean by that is that we are kind of in this transitional phase where things are tending toward the digital. Like at this point, Nintendo would rather you download the game.
Yeah.
And give them the same full retail price, but they save the production cost, the shipping, the distribution, and dealing with the 8 or 9 different retailers that all have to have their own exclusive pre-order bonuses, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're actually in a market that's so complicated. I think it's not just Nintendo's fault here. I think it's the complicated retail market in North America.
Mm-hmm.
That's causing a lot of these problems with amiibos, and it's not just amiibos, it's pre-order bonuses in other video games across all the platforms. It's getting so complicated that inevitably we're going to get to a point as consumers where digital is just so much easier that we're actually going to kill off physical media by ourselves.
Yeah, it's going down that path. I think from the scholarship side of things, I feel like there's more attention being paid to the physical media and like the actual physicality of the technology that we're engaging with. But I think you're right. Like in, from the enthusiast like consumer perspective, that stuff is slowly dying off.
Mm-hmm.
For the better or the worse, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
Not leaving my house is a great thing as a person who doesn't like leaving their house.
People used to make a lot bigger deal out of, like, getting the physical game or, like,
yeah.
even just, like, think back to people being like, I have to have the actual CD.
Yeah.
You know?
Manuals, you know,
it, yeah.
You'd be surprised. There are some really hardcore collectors out there who, well, you know, go through bins of game cases just to find the one that's just slightly perfect,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, amalgamate other cases with, like, you know, oh, there's, like, instruction manual here. Oh, this one has a French one, too. Gotta have that.
Where that scares me is when we start going down the path of, like, you know, companies taking servers offline.
Yeah.
And from an archivist perspective, like...
Well, and that funny thing about that is that when I was at that Walmart near my cottage, which is kind of like a... Like, you know, it's like a weird area. They had City of Villains on sale for like $60. And I'm like, can they do that?
Is that allowed?
Can they do that? Because their servers are down. They shut down those servers. And it's like, is that illegal?
I
wonder.
It's just Walmart being Walmart. I mean, I saw other M new copies for $69.99. And when I asked the person that was, you know, the nice little 70-year-old lady, you know, what's that about? She just said, oh, it's the newest Metroid game.
So it's true.
I just kind of looked at that.
I think when you were like following video games really closely, it's easy to forget how much you are like when you bring that outside of that world to other people who do not follow it anywhere near as closely. You are speaking dog whistles to them. They just kind of look at you like,
oh yeah. Well, and I think the Amiibo thing has proved that. Like, I think everyone who's even tried to buy an Amiibo has talked to someone who worked in store who just was like, no clue what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Guilty. Yeah.
But I wonder if it's a disorienting thing for the fans, too, because we're so used to just ordering it off Amazon or digitally
mm-hmm.
downloading. It's like, wait, I actually have to go into the store to get these things? And it's a whole new game all of a sudden again where, like, how, like, we're not used to that
That's
anymore.
A really good point. Like, I have physically been to the store to buy or pre-order a video game thing more times this year.
Yeah.
Than probably the whole last year combined. Like, that's, like, would be an actual strategy. Like, we'll put out these stupid figurines and we'll make them hard to find so people will just go and buy physical video games again.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know. That seems like... I mean, from the perspective of, like, let's say a retailer, you know, that's a great thing, right? But
yeah.
From Nintendo's vantage point, does it really make much of a difference?
Yeah.
On the other hand, though, whenever the fans, as a collective, get angry about something... Like the faceplate 3DS not coming out,
yeah.
or the Operation Rainfall games that took like an extra 2 years to come out here. Nintendo of America's response is usually shelf space. It's they usually pass the buck to the retailers. They say that retailers aren't willing to give us this much space to stock this many things, this many editions, this many games.
Which is funny because the shelves are full of shovelware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like just full of Imagine Party babies.
That is true, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, though. I mean, to go back to sort of the comment I made earlier about, you know, how Nintendo early on had, like, the quality control thing. I think that kind of teetered off around the Wii. Because even, I remember, like, Nintendo, like, the NES, the Super NES, you know, they still had, even the N64 had, like, you know, the Nintendo seal of approval. And anything that didn't have it wouldn't necessarily work because it didn't, get Nintendo's pride.
Doesn't remember what it used to mean now.
Interesting anecdote here. When the it was around the time when the Wii came out that the little logo on the back of all Nintendo packaging that says Official Nintendo Seal of Quality
mm-hmm.
was changed to just say Official Nintendo Seal.
Yeah.
I was actually looking at this Toon Link package right now, and yeah, there's no promise of quality here. It's just Official Nintendo Seal.
Yeah,
well, I mean, compared to the Japanese prototypes that they were showing, I remember... a couple of the customers, when we first were releasing the Meebles, they were complaining about how Princess Peach had really detailed panties at the Japanese prototype, and how the mass-produced ones don't quite have that same level of detail.
Wow.
That's the thing I'm probably okay with.
Yeah.
Wow.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, that's
At least this one has feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's all the questions I had. Do we have anything else that didn't get said that you feel like saying?
No, it kind of covered everything I was going to talk about.
I feel like we've given Nintendo a pretty good bollocking.
Yeah.
So I'm adding a little postscript to this podcast because, as many of you know, I'm sure the Amiibo thing has changed a lot since we recorded this. A lot of things are very different. So basically, I just wanted to say that since then, Rob has ordered Shulk from Japan, so he's no longer sulking. Alex and I ordered a Wii Fit trainer and a Sheik from Amazon France. She traded hers for Rosalina because our Rosalina pre-orders got canceled by Amazon. Chris has bought 8 Amiibos after the podcast, but says that he will never have any rare ones and has never seen any rare runs. And Andre, who's probably the only one who's seen all the rare ones because of his job, is still just rocking that single Pikachu. I think it's also worth noting that none of us have a golden Mario, of course. So that's all for our podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Look forward to more FPS podcasts. We're planning to do one per semester, and we're also going to start doing one Let's Play per semester, and that's already recorded. So keep your eyes out for that Let's Play really soon.